Welcome back to The Roundtable. I'm Ian Pickus. We're about to talk to a person whose work is heard multiple times a day on WAMC, but rarely his voice. Until now.
Sometimes I think of all the times I think about the times I'm thinking about nothing else but you. You know it seems so very hard to go about my busy day, but I've got nothing else to do. Your face committed to my memory. My life just isn't what it used to be. Oh no.
BJ Lederman, the composer behind several public radio theme songs, including those from Morning Edition, Marketplace, Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me, and more, is out with his first album. It's both funny and serious, cheeky and earnest, and it even features Bela Fleck on banjo. BJ Lederman, welcome to the Roundtable.
Thanks so much. It's great to be here.
I read that you have been considering putting this album together for several decades, so why now?
Well, I'm not going to be on the earth for too much longer, Ian. Music has changed so much since I first started this. The album is a compilation of songs that I wrote, some of them a couple of decades ago and some of them just many months ago. I've been talking about it for 30 years and spent the last 5 years doing it. It's my first bucket list thing. It'd probably be the first thing I've ever finished in my entire life, as far as a big project type of thing. I don't know if you can say I finished, you know, doing theme music. Maybe I am finished doing theme music. That's fine. You know, I'm quite appreciative of the more than 15 minutes of, well, you call it public radio fame that I've had with the themes. But what your audience doesn't know is that my theme gig is my side gig. My life is really rock and roll, even drums. I'd rather play drums than anything else.
Well, I was going to ask you that question, BJ, which is, what is your job?
That's a good question. Can I get loose and crazy with you on this show?
A little bit, sure.
Okay. Well, I've been sitting on my ass for 30 years, enjoying my life. I've been enjoying my life. My job has been... My job has been trying to keep myself sane and non-attached from all of the crazy stuff that we, you know, train our kids to try to snatch in this world, and turn myself from that to the things that are more important and longer lasting. That was my job. I've been extremely fortunate, I think, to be able to have the wherewithal and the time and the inclination to go do that. So when you ask me what's my job, I can hear my deceased mother going, "Yeah, BJ, what is your job?"
Speaking of which, she's on the album. At least I think it's her, right?
You know, she's the only one who I don't have a release form signed for, because when she passed away, I'd been collecting a bunch of her voicemail messages. And I edited about one or two minutes of that stuff together one day and put some music behind it and played it to some folks and some people in my band and some friends. And a lot of them said, "Man, you got to put this on the album." And I never really considered it, but I went and did it. It's hilarious. She starts off with, I can do her pretty well, I think. She starts off with, "BJ, don't buy romaine lettuce."
This is your once a day loving mother calling you. Bye, darling. BJ, call me as soon as possible. It's very important. Very important. Please call me. It's 1:45. I'll be here. Thank you.
There's something wrong with romaine lettuce. You can buy the other lettuce, but don't buy romaine lettuce. It's your mother.
She would always end with, it's your mother. is like, okay, thank you. I didn't really know who this was.
Did you have that kind of, you know, Woody Allen-ish Jewish upbringing?
Yeah. Yeah. I'm an only child. I'm the only surviving triplet. struck by lightning when I was 7 years old. Yeah, I'm not your normal guy. I'm out there on the edge. You know, I've been trying to be a nice guy, a good guy for NPR. You know, I've been trying to keep my picture off the post office wall for 3 decades. You know, and not screw up my scene with NPR and not, because I'm not an NPR employee. I've never been, but most people, you know, see me as the musical theme voice of NPR. And if I was out there doing what I really wanted to do all these years, you wouldn't be talking to me now.
How much actual time went into establishing the songs that you did compose for NPR themes? Because I know, like, Morning Edition has been on for almost 4 decades, your theme for that in one form or another. But how much actual time went into it?
The best themes and the best songs, I truly believe, and I've heard other composers say this, come very quickly. I mean, you can work hard and get to something, but way back in the day when I got the call to do a demo for a yet unnamed morning news show, they had a deadline, and I think it was spring break. I went home to my mom's piano, a Baldwin Acrosonic that I had beaten out of tune playing too many Beatles songs, and it just sort of came. It came to me. It came very quickly. You know, I recorded it on a cassette and then went to a friend's house and put a 4-track demo together. And I gave that cassette to a friend of mine, Skip Peasy, who was working at NPR in engineering. And he had actually, before this, he slipped a cassette of my jingle demos. Yes, folks, I did jingles. Even a dairy jingle with a singing cow. I'll probably pay for all this later. But he had given that jingle demo to then-producer Jim Russell, who liked it and had me go ahead and do the 4-track demo for the theme, and they loved the theme. And the interesting thing is that Jim left a Morning Edition before it went on the air to go do other things, including Marketplace, and handed over the reins to Jay Kernis. And he actually not only handed over the reins, but handed over this demo cassette and said, you know, this is Lederman's demo. We like it. Please use it if you can. And my whole life has been a series of being in the right place at the right time with, you know, good people who cared about me. And I think my contribution was showing up with a good, you know, number of 4 or 5 chords in a tune and a great melody that stayed with people.
I just want to say that Jay Kernis is a good friend of WAMC. We consider him a friend of the station. So any story that involves Jay is a happy one for us.
For me, too.
We're talking to BJ Lederman, who has a new album, and you know him from his NPR themes, which he's been talking about. Can I ask a question about compensation? Like, do you get a residual for having the theme song on every morning?
Every single time.
Well, that's pretty good.
I'm lying. Yeah, I get $1 million every time it's played. You know, it's funny, Ian, I think that's the first question people normally ask me. Do you get paid every time it's played? No, I don't get paid every time it's played. I'm a member of ASCAP and the publishing rights organization, and most of the publishing rights organizations have a special formula that they use to determine what a composer and a publisher gets paid. And, you know, HBO and all the networks and NPR, they all pay a blanket license fee to these publishing organizations, which allows some of the money to filter down to us. I've gotten sort of famous with NPR. I haven't gotten rich, but boy, that theme credit or theme music is by BJ Lee. If my name was, you know, Joe Smith, nothing would have happened in my life. But thank you, Mom and Dad, for naming me BJ. Sorry about all that grief I gave you in middle school and high school, because when people were killing me about that name, everything just worked out.
So you're eternally popular with, like, the set that I assume your parents would want you to be in with.
No. My parents would have wanted me to be a doctor right now or a lawyer. Okay? But, you know, it's their fault that Dad brought home Meet the Beatles from work at his department store. It's their fault that they set me in front of the TV for the Ed Sullivan Show when the Beatles first appeared. It's their fault that they bought me a snare drum and I had to go into the kitchen and steal some of Mom's pot and pan tops that I used as cymbals in my room, hung by strings from my lamps. Yeah, it's they you know, ultimately they were extremely proud of me. Can I tell you this little story that my mother used to tell me before she passed away about when she played bridge with her friends, and one of the ladies was talking about her son, the lawyer who had just, you know, finished this big case, and the other lady was talking about her son, the doctor who had just was accepted at a big hospital, and blah blah blah. My mother puts her winning hand down and she says, "My son is B.J. Lederman." Who cares?
But still, they, you know, they say your name every day. That's worth something.
It's worth everything. You know, I have the utmost empathy for my friends in the music business, back in Virginia Beach and here in Asheville and everywhere. You know, these troubadours who are pounding the pavement, playing week in, week out, every weekend. And here I am. I perform now and then, but I've got this huge name recognition and, you know, a brand, I guess that's what they call it these days, from the on-air credit that I've been given. And so the main question is, Ian, you're right, why now? The question should be, what took you so long? What was I waiting for? And because realistically, I should have been putting albums out since Morning Edition went on. I just, you know, I don't have a business head. I wasn't really in this for the money. But yeah, I should have cultivated an audience earlier on with a bunch of albums. But I don't know. I guess I was enjoying my life too much. I guess that was it. Because you know what they say, when you hit it, if you hit it big, things don't get easier. They get a lot harder.
Well, how are you doing nowadays?
Could you be more specific?
I've read that you've had your battles with depression. And
oh, yeah.
You just mentioned that you weren't enjoying life for some of those years. So
it's positive. It's all I've been through up to today has gone into my material. And part of the reason I'm where I am is the Lyme disease that I got 30 years ago, and my memory is really giving me problems. It's sort of like I'm dancing as fast as I can. I think this might be maybe my last hurrah. I'm not sure before I, you know, wearing a name tag, but that's what it feels like anyway.
So I understand that you compose, but you don't read music, and you just said that your memory has been problematic. Does that make it more difficult when you are trying to play something? I mean, how do you actually chart out what you're going to do?
You know, strangely enough, songs that I learned a long time ago, I can count to four and play them. They're seated in my long-term memory. What's happened to me is that my working memory, it's prefrontal cortex stuff. My brain is like a computer that does not know where to store verbal information mostly. I mean, that's how we communicate, talking to each other, and that's the one part of my mind that is kind of going south. So I have to take, you know, conversations in short chunks. I'm always telling people to slow down or shut up. But as far as writing stuff, you could be an author and not know how to read or write a language. It's the tape recorder back in the day. You know, I would tape my demos, and the best thing that ever happened to me along the line was for NPR to introduce me to arranger Jim Pugh. When I lived in New York, Jim was an A-list trombone player on studio sessions and everything from jingles to movie scores. And for the last few years, I mean 7 years or so, he's been playing with Steely Dan. So it's just exciting to go to a Steely Dan concert, and he actually got me backstage. So there you have it.
Now, will you tour to support this record?
Yeah, I would like to very much. You know, this is such an interesting period for me, this bunch of weeks. And when we finally see what the record does and what interest there is from other public radio member stations. That's what I've always intended to do by way of giving back. Because folks, if you're listening, especially during, you know, a pledge drive moments, you really have to know that the shows that they air, morning editions, the weekend editions, the marketplaces, the Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me's, they are not free. These stations have to pay a serious fee to air these shows. So I would like to be able to go around to public radio member stations in towns and cities, solo and with my band. The Randall Bramlett Band is, by the way, they are the backup band on this album. They're fabulous. When Bonnie Raitt and Greg Allman, and when they go out on tour, they take the Randall Bramlett Band as their backup. So I was very blessed to have them on the album also. But yeah, I'll be touring all over the country. That will be in the probably in the fall starting.
Well, let me put in a plug for WAMC's performing arts studio, the Linda, which I think would be really excited to have you if it can be worked out. I don't know. We'll get to work on that.
I hope you do. I'd love to do that.
Let me ask another question about the album, if you don't mind. You did mention that you've been dealing with depression over the years now and then, and there's a song called Walking Down the Street on the album, which is about someone jumping out of a building.
Have you seen the music video, by the way?
Yes, I did, for like the crowdfunding effort, right?
Yeah, the music video is a cartoon. And the song is a cartoon. But I had a screenplay in my mind for years that started out with a guy who had lost his girlfriend, and his girlfriend left him, and went to the top of a tall building and was threatening to jump off. And the crowd is down there, you know, the police are down on the street. And the girlfriend comes in and takes the bullhorn away from the police sergeant. He says, I'll get him down. And she takes the bullhorn and says, well, go ahead and jump. So that's, and then the credits roll. So this is a song, I must say, that shows, you know, pretty much how bent and quirky I am. Because, yeah, when you write a song where the guy jumps off a building in the first verse, you better deliver by the end of the song. So time slows down as he's falling and looking into different windows in different floors of this building. And I just need to tell everybody the song, it ends well. Fear not. It's not a depressing song. It's actually you will have a giggle and a laugh at the end of this number.
Did I leave the oven on? Hey, things have never seemed so clear. Just a few seconds, it'll all be gone. Now the ground is coming at me at a rapid pace. I see a woman waving, recognize her face. It's my Mary and she's yelling that she'll take me back. So I launched the parachute I had wisely packed. I gently left beside.
But yeah, I guess you want me to talk a little bit about you know, these invisible diseases, they're rough. They're rough because whether it's Lyme disease or depression, they don't come with a schedule. They don't hit you with a reason. And the people around you, when you're suffering through a severe bout, will think that you're lazy. Or they'll think that you're dissing them, you know, because you may have to cancel an appointment, or when you show up, you know, you just can't. And I've been trying my best. I'm trying my best right now, Ian. You know, I wouldn't say I'm not the Muhammad Ali of mental health right now, but you do your best when you can. The flip side of the coin is that, yeah, being kind of not normal and suffering this kind of stuff does open you up to a cornucopia of possibilities when it comes to doing your art. And it's funny, saying that scares the hell out of me right now, because I've never even considered anything I've ever done as art. But as we get into this record, you know, some of these songs I can actually say, wow, that's my artistic endeavor.
Does it help?
Yeah, it actually does. You know, it's so strange. You write a song And, you know, you're alone, you're doing it by yourself, and then you get a band together, and they help you form it. And I do have my Asheville band players to thank for helping me get these songs, you know, in order. And then you're, next thing you know, you're in a recording studio, and everything's all business. And I've got, I was blessed by being introduced to Eric Serafin, who goes by the moniker Mixer Man. He was 25-year veteran in L.A. with all kinds of huge bands. He moved to Asheville, and I got put together with him. And, you know, I gave him the carte blanche. I moved out of the way because I realized that I couldn't produce this thing myself. I was too close to it. Anyway, then you move on, and you're performing this thing on stage with the band in front of live audiences. And it's like you've been plucked from one alien planet to another alien planet. It's been set down on that planet, and then you're plucked from that one. It's all very surreal at times. And don't even get me started about doing the music videos.
Are you doing more now besides the first one?
Yes, there's a, the songs on my album range from pretty serious message songs. There's a couple of songs that I wrote shortly after the first Gulf War and the war in Afghanistan, because I was just apoplectic about the situation. And sure enough, a decent song or two came out of that, to some really crazy, quirky songs like My Mom's Phone Messages. And there's another one along those lines called Maisie's Song, about from the point of view of my dog, Maisie. I sort of get into this, you know, Frank Zappa voice. I go, "My name is Maisie, and I'm BJ's dog." It's a cool, smoky jazz in the background. Randall Bramlett, you know, riffing on the saxophone. It's kind of nice. Ian, one more thing before we go. You know, for 3 years, I've been calling, the title of this album was Natural Public Lederman, and I was using NPR's logo. And I figured that if in 3 years they, you know, didn't contact me, I think I was okay. Well, you know, just like 6 weeks ago or 8 weeks ago, I got a phone call. And they said, "We'd rather you not use our logo colors." And, you know, and I looked at the thing. I said, "You know, this really does look like your colors. It's very interesting." And they said, "We'd also appreciate it if you would change the name of the album." And, you know, NPR has been extremely great to me. So I said, "No problem." I was thinking about calling it BJ anyway. So the name of the album is now BJ. And it's a roller coaster ride. It will cure your ills. America isn't, you know, there's a lot of people going around with their hands on their foreheads now. Oi, what's going on? Well, this is the album that will get you dancing and singing and forget all your troubles in about 5 minutes. Bigly. Bigly. Believe me.
BJ Lederman, congratulations on the album. It's called BJ. It is out now, and we'll continue to smile when we hear your work just about on the hour here at WAMC. Thank you so much.
Thanks for having me. Get me out there to rock and roll with you guys, okay? Thank you, Ian. Everybody, goodbye. It's been great.
That was composer BJ Lederman discussing his album BJ. The songs we heard during this interview were called Sometimes, Mom's Phone Messages, Walking Down the Street, and Bring on the Sunrise. I'm Ian Pickus, and you're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.